Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station.
Hey, Grant, what are you doing up there on that rack?
Ow! Ooh! Ah! I'm getting prepared for Extended.
No, that's not what I mean. aviationextended.co.uk.
Go!
I just couldn't help thinking about all the veterans that I've met and, you know, those guys flying these things 80 years ago. It was just, it's a strange feeling. It really is. It's wonderful. You guys are so lucky to have these flying tributes. And there are you got so many amazing warbirds in this country, and you take it for granted because it's always been there. And a lot of people that I've talked to over the last few weeks are all the same, that they've seen me reacting to these things. I've gone, gosh, well, you know, maybe these things are actually pretty special. Yeah.
Extended, your aerospace radio station.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Today I'm joined by Dave Homewood from the Wings Over New Zealand podcast. And many of you remember Dave from our work together on the Coastal Command series. But Dave is actually in the UK today. I met up with him last week. We had a fabulous pint in a local pub to talk aeroplanes. We didn't get time to record, so we decided we'd jump on a call and talk about his tour, the Wings Over Britain tour. Dave, welcome to Extended.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you back. It's great to hear those New Zealand tones back in my head, back in my headphones. Dave, explain to us, what is the Wings Over Britain tour?
Basically, this is an idea that came to me many years ago. I really wanted to sort of extend my Wings Over New Zealand show podcast because I've been doing that for 11 and a half years now, and I think about maybe 8 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer, I decided that it'd be a really good idea to maybe do a bit of a tour around England and go to all the museums and various collections and catch up with people who are involved in aviation preservation, warbirds, airshow flying, all that sort of thing, and record a series as I go around the country. And I kind of was thinking about this idea, but I had no real way of doing it at the time because it was going to cost a lot of money. And then along came, out of the blue, James Keightley and Grant McEachran both got together, and they came up with an idea of me doing Wings Over Australia, which was exactly the same concept, independently of my own thought. And so in 2015, I did a tour around New South Wales, Victoria, and ACT, visiting museums and pilots and people involved in warbirds and things like that in Australia. And I was partnered with James Keightley as my co-host, and we made Wings Over Australia, which you can still listen to on my website. I think we ended up with about 25 episodes promoting Australian aviation and preservation, that sort of thing. And I decided that I really wanted to do the English one after that, and I started saving up and making a plan. And the original plan was to do it in 2019, and I hoped to get to the big anniversary of D-Day. And, of course, I didn't quite get the money together. So that got postponed to 2020, and it was all go for 2020. And you know what happened there? Unfortunately, we got locked in the country, and it couldn't happen.
Yeah, so, we all did. Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a three-year delay, and then I finally got here on the 26th of June. Yeah, 26th of June.
Yeah.
Or 25th of June, sorry.
And we're recording this on the 22nd of July. And I think it's fair to say, Dave, that I don't think you have a day free when you're not talking to somebody about aeroplanes.
You're absolutely right. This whole tour has been ram-packed with aviation. I've been moving every day or two. I've been moving from one place to the next. A lot of train travel, a lot of bus travel, and a lot of travel with friends who have very kindly come on board and helped out with both accommodation and transport. Also catching up with loads of friends that I've known for many years on Facebook and on the forums and various things like that, at these museums and air shows, and it's actually been such a wonderful tour. I haven't had a chance to stop and really absorb everything. In fact, you know, honestly, Peter, it's been 4 weeks now. It's actually 4 weeks today since I set off from home in New Zealand, and it really feels like I've been here for 3 months because I've put so much in.
And well, let's go back, Dave. I mean, I know you've still got a little bit to do before you head back down under, but let's go back. And because, I mean, from memory, I remember you sending me the plan, which, of course, in good preparation fashion, I've completely lost from my notes. But you sent me the plan. I'm trying to add up the number of events, museums, air shows, interviews, memorials, museums that you went to. And I think I sort of gave up in, I give up at about 30, I think, 30 odd. But why don't you talk us through this? Because I think, to be absolutely honest, Dave, you are living the aviation enthusiast dream in the UK. You are doing things that probably Ellie, Gareth, Tim and myself put together probably haven't done at any time. So give us a flavour.
Well, you're absolutely right. I am living the dream, and this has been, as I said, my dream for years now. And for it to all actually be happening and coming together, and most of it's gone so perfectly, it is an absolute dream. When I arrived at Heathrow on the 25th, I basically went straight to Windsor just to, you know, get over the flight. And the next day I went to Burford, which isn't too far away, in the Cotswolds. And my plan was basically to spend a couple of days there and just see a little bit of the countryside and just relax before I got into the aviation stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
However, just before I came to Britain, I found out that there was a chap called Ross Boyens who was a New Zealander, and he had served in the RAF, and he flew Harriers in the Falkland Islands, and then he went on to become a member of the Red Arrows. And when I found out about this guy and tried to track him down just to see where he was, I found out he was just in the Cotswolds there and still on the wall. So I immediately got hold of him and said, can I come see you? And he's like, yeah, of course. And so my second day basically in England, I went and did this recording with Ross, and you can listen to that. It's up online already. Fantastic to meet him. And that was a last minute add on to the whole journey. A really, really neat one.
Now, Dave, just let me jump in there before we talk about the tour a little bit more. Yep. Just to make everyone aware, the one of the outcomes of this tour is a whole podcast series, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Yep, absolutely, yep.
Called the Wings Over Britain series. So, and this is episode one you're talking about. How many have you got out so far? I know you're traveling every single day. So where are we at the moment?
I have released two, and I've just finished editing the third one. It's been difficult to find the time to do editing, and also really difficult to get Wi-Fi in the hotels that actually allows you to, you know, put big files up online. So The third one I'm hoping to put up tonight. Hopefully, but by the time your podcast comes out, it should be up there. But they'll keep coming out as soon as I can edit them. And of course, I'll be going home at the end of next week. On the 31st, I jump on the plane. So once I get home, I'll be able to, you know, get more out.
Yeah.
Now, Wings Over Britain, I will explain, is a sub-series of Wings Over New Zealand. So it's all under the same banner, and you'll find it on the same website.
Right.
It's not a separate series.
We put all links to that. And what I can say is that episode 2 of the series is close to my heart. It is out, and it's a great episode from the Navy Wings team. So if you have any interest there, get over to that one. We'll put a link in the show notes. Sorry, Dave, let's crack on. That was day one.
Yeah, well, day one was with Ross. Well, that was basically day two of the trip. But as you said, we went to Yeovilton. Now, I linked up with a good friend of mine, Kieran Lair, and he's in the RAF. He took a few days off, and we went travelling. So we went down to Yeovilton the day after we'd visited Ross Boyens. And at Yeovilton, we first of all went to the Fleet Air Arm Museum. I recorded a great interview there with Dave Morris.
Yeah.
That one hasn't come out just yet because they want to just review it before it goes live, which is, you know, their prerogative, right. And they can do that. He was great. He was really interesting.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard him on your show, of course, in the past. And
yeah,
it was
he's
a pleasure
amazing.
To meet him. Pleasure to meet him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, he just knows everything about the Fleet Air Arm. There's not a question I can't go to hear more Matt Willis about and not find an answer.
Indeed. And then we linked up with Lee Howard, who's a well-known naval historian and photographer and everything. And he escorted us over the other side of the airfield to Navy Wings, and that's where I recorded that episode with Lee and with Rob Jones, who works for Navy Wings. And they basically gave us a really interesting hangar tour of all the aircraft, and we got to see a little bit of activity. I mean, there's a lot more going on than what you hear in the in the podcast as well. We got to see the Seafire doing engine runs and taxis, which was preparing for Shuttleworth, but then it didn't make it to Shuttleworth, unfortunately.
And Dave, just a quick question on those visits to the Fleet Air Arm Museum and Navy Wings. What in particular were you looking for? Very much that New Zealand angle?
Along the way in this whole trip, I'm looking for New Zealand angles where I can get them, and there always seems to be some. And in particular with Fleet Air Arm, there were a lot of New Zealanders in the World War II Fleet Air Arm.
Yeah.
You know, wherever I can work in questions or statements about what those guys did, I have done so. I think that probably a lot of the time what I'm talking about sort of goes over the heads of the British people, because they're not thinking the way that I am about the New Zealand angle. But, I mean, you know, like I've actually in the past tracked down and met around about 25 New Zealanders who flew in the Fleet Air Arm. They were the last guys still around. I tried to track down as many as I could before they were all gone. And I did meet a number of Swordfish pilots. I met Seafire pilots, Corsair pilots, one Hellcat pilot, Albacore pilots, even Barracuda pilots, all sorts. And so I'm more of an Air Force guy, I'm ex-Air Force, but those Fleet Air stories, they really were quite inspiring from those guys, and I really enjoyed them. So it was really good to actually get to see some of these aircraft. I mean, you know, I haven't seen most of the aircraft that I've been seeing in the last 4 weeks. I've never seen them in my life, in real life. I've only ever seen photos. So, you know, that's been pretty cool.
Wonderful, Dave. I mean, obviously I've got a passion for that, so I just wanted to ponder there for a bit, but the excitement didn't stop there, did it?
No, well, the next day, Kieran and I went and visited the Army Fire Museum, and that was one of the museums that never actually got back to me, so I didn't record anything there, but we did have a look around, and that's an interesting museum. Lots of good stuff going on there.
Yeah. Middle Wallop.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
And interesting to see that great big airfield that was a Battle of Britain airfield and that sort of thing.
Yeah, of course.
And got to see Apaches flying in and out, which is the first time I've ever seen an Apache helicopter. So.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And then Kieran had to depart because of work, and I went on to Brooklands Museum.
Yeah.
And I caught up there with Andrew Lewis and Alan Wynn, the curator and the former CEO, but now vice chairman of the Brooklands Trust. And so I recorded an excellent interview with those guys. I was so impressed with Brooklands. It's a fantastic museum. Yeah, it really is. And I've actually edited that one today, and I hope to get it out tonight so long as I can get the internet working properly.
I won't keep you on too long. Don't worry.
Yeah. So by the time that you hear this episode, hopefully my Brooklands episode should be out there. The next day I went to Biggin Hill Memorial Museum, and I caught up with a couple of people there. I found that really fascinating. I talked to one of the guides of the museum, and he gave me a massive history of the place, which is absolutely fascinating. I've always sort of associated the Biggin Hill airfield with World War II, and I never realized that it had all this history back to World War I, and it was an incredible site of the development of radio between aircraft and that sort of thing. So, So that was good. And also talked with I'm just trying to think. She's I've forgotten her title. A verger, I think, from the Memorial Church there. And so that's an interesting one as well.
Wow. Okay.
Everything's starting to mold in my head into one big glob.
Because
I'm forgetting names.
I don't want to nail you to the mast for every single event. Yeah. That you went to, so maybe we should pick out some of the I don't know if it's highlights, because everyone's a highlight. But maybe pick out, let's talk about some of the shows you've been to and some of the flying events you've been to.
I was the very next day I went up to Biggleswade, and I caught up with Darren Harbour there, the well-known photographer, and he showed me around Shuttleworth Collection the day before the air show, which was on the 2nd of July.
And that's a treat. That's a real treat.
Absolutely. It was the air show was just mind-boggling to me. I had no idea how – I mean, I've always read about Shuttleworth and Old Warden and all that, and I've always wanted to go there. It's like a dream come true. It's way better than I even expected. It's so good. and all of those aircraft, I mean, not everything flew, but the ones that did, they were just incredible. And I think the thing that sticks in my mind the most from their collection would be having seen the de Havilland Comet, because it has such a great connection with New Zealand, being flown by Kiwi Arthur Clouston.
Right.
On all those long distance flights back in the 1930s, including all the way to Omaka in New Zealand and back. I got to see two of the most famous bombers in the world for the first time in the air. And that's the, B-17, Sally B.
Yeah.
I got to see Sally B in the air, and I got to see the Lancaster close the show. Now, that was just so emotional, seeing the Lancaster in the air. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
All these years I've, you know, met up with Lancaster veterans, and it was great. It was so good. And also at the show there, I got to meet a few other people, and including George Dunn, the 100-year-old veteran pilot
that's
quite well known. So I've got a bit of an interview with him. And
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and Dave, I just want to put you on the spot a bit, come back to that. To the piece about the Lancaster, because I take for granted, and I say that quite lightly, but having seen it for many times, however, it's only recently that it plays such an emotional song in my heart, I think, is the point. You were hearing these aircraft for the first time. You've seen them, but when you hear them and see them, it sort of feels a bit different.
Absolutely.
Tell us what you were feeling, you know, and that sound and that emotion.
It was hard to describe. I mean, absolute joy at actually being able to see it for the first time. And also, I just couldn't help thinking about all the veterans that I've met and, you know, those guys flying these things 80 years ago. It's a strange feeling. It really is.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. You guys are so lucky to have these flying tributes. And there are you got so many amazing warbirds in this country. And a lot of, you just said you take it for granted because it's always been there. And a lot of people that I've talked to over the last few weeks are all the same. And I think they've stopped and thought because they've seen me reacting to these things. They've gone, gosh, well, you know, maybe these things are actually pretty special.
Yeah.
And I think we probably do the same in New Zealand. Some of the stuff that we see all the time, like the Avro Anson or, you know, stuff like that no one else has. I'm always make a point of not taking it for granted because you never know when it's going to be gone again, sold overseas or something. However, you know, you do get used to these things and, you see something new, it's quite amazing.
It is tough, but I think I think in my slightly older years now, when I go to an air show or watch the air show, I take less pictures now because I want to see it with my eyes because I miss it.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, just interrupted you there. Just finish up on the Shuttleworth then.
I actually recorded a few interviews around Shuttleworth, and my big plan was the next day I was meant to go back there and had arranged to talk with some of the engineers, which was going to make it a really nice rounded episode. Unfortunately, because of your ruddy train strikes, I got a message telling me that my ticket that I'd booked had been cancelled for that afternoon and I had no choice but to go in the morning. So I missed out on talking to the engineers, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I have to apologize about the weather and the multiple train strikes that have occurred during your visit.
Well, the weather hasn't been too bad. It was only just on the air show weekend of all things. Not the Shuttleworth was perfect weather. Little bit windy for some of the things, but unfortunately, Riet and Flying Legends, they got the rain. So, after Shuttleworth, I headed up to Lincolnshire for several
now
days.
I know this was going to be a part of the world you were really, really keen to get to.
Yes, absolutely. There's so much going on there. And my tour is supported, backed by the New Zealand Bomber Command Association. And I have to say another shout out here to Barbie and Ken, believe it or not. they're stalwarts of New Zealand Bomber Command Association in New Zealand, and they live in Woodall Spa for half the year, and they live in Waiheke Island for the other half of the year, which is just off the coast of Auckland.
Wow.
Now, Barbara Hunter, she's the veteran liaison in New Zealand for our Bomber Command veterans, but here in the UK, she knows, she's very familiar with all of the sites. And so they were helping me get around to all these places. And,
And
it worked out really well that ticket got cancelled, that train ticket, because it meant I got there earlier, which meant that I arrived in time for, her partner Ken to pick me up and take me straight to Metheringham. Because there was an event on there and it was the 106 Squadron Association having their annual reunion. Now they have no veterans left, but their children and grandchildren all meet every year. Now how special is that?
And, I've not heard of that actually.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so there's a little museum at Metheringham, where 106 Squadron was based and they gather there. And there were people from all over, like down London and the South Coast, and there was one lady there that had come down from Inverness. just for this event. And they there's about probably five, six, seven of them each got up and they did a little presentation on their veteran that, who's no longer with us, so their grandfather and father.
Wow, wow.
With their photos and stuff. And it was brilliant, just a little thing about their service and their life. And then from there, I think before I got there, they'd already had a look through the museum, but I had a very quick look. But we all then got in cars, and there's about, I don't know, 25 cars, and we drove around the outskirts of the airfield, which all the perimeter track is still there. And the owner of the land, he owns the museum, and he gave this wonderful talk on what was there, and he stopped in the middle of this great big huge field where you could still see the Fido tracks where the anti-fog stuff.
Yeah.
And things like that. And then we went around the other side of the airfield and he took us into an old control tower which has been rebuilt because it's been quite run down and it's been restored and turned into a house. And that's the Metherindon control tower. So,
wow.
I mean, that was totally unexpected for me.
That's
my introduction to Bomber County.
Dave, you're really teaching us Brits what we've got on our doorstep here, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got so much. You know, the next day I went up to East Kirby and got to see Just Jane run her engines and I got to see the Mosquito running its engines. So I've now seen four mosquitoes running their engines, which is pretty cool.
We haven't seen that many.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That was pretty neat. And I got to do an interview there with John Marshall East, who is their, I think he's their deputy chief mechanic, and he's been there for donkey's years, and he was a really interesting guy.
Did you know that during the Falklands War in 1982, there was a plan to put the Black Buck raids on steroids by sending an Avro Vulcan to bomb airfield targets on mainland Argentina, potentially returning to RAF Waddington the long way round via Chile, Easter Island, Tahiti, Hawaii, the USA and Canada? Did you also know that during the Second World War, a proposal was made to build B-29 superfortresses in the UK, powered by Bristol Centaurus engines? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal, print and digital, that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
Following day, I went to the International Bomber Command Center in Lincoln. I don't know if you've been there, but that's a really interesting and emotional place as well.
I was going to say quite moving.
It is. That memorial there is just stunning. But talking with Dr. Dan Allen about his work there and also others there, it was incredible that the work they're doing to record all the information, collecting digital copies of logbooks and letters and diaries and all sorts of things like that. It's fantastic. So that's another great episode. I had a really good day on the 6th of July with Dave Gledhill, who I think
he's
been on your show, hasn't he?
Yeah, a few times. He's a great guy.
He invited me to come and have a look at his Panavia tornado simulator, which he's got all set up so that you can fly other types of aircraft in it as well with what's it called, VR or whatever,
virtual reality.
So I got to fly a Spitfire and also a Lancaster over the Ruhr Dam.
Of course you did.
Yeah, sitting in a tornado. It was fantastic. And from there I went down the road. Just down the road, because he's at Thorpe Camp. That's where that is.
Yeah.
Just down the road at Coningsby. I had meant to have interviewed the CEO of BBMF, but unfortunately he got busy that week, and so I ended up doing an interview with one of the guides there, which was good. And then we went to the Bluebell Inn, the famous pub there that's got all the signatures on the ceiling, and that was a really interesting one as well.
Dave, let's maybe move on to I want to talk about Legends, and I want to talk about Riyat as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, Riyat's about the only thing on this whole trip that I'm trying to forget. I've never been so wet in my life. Oh my god.
Gosh, that's an accomplishment then.
I mean, Riyat for me was never going to be the desired air show to go to, really, because I'm not into the grey, pointy, noisy, bloody jets. So, I really did want to see the Messerschmitt 262. And of course, on the Friday, it didn't even come out of the hangar, which is on the other side of the airfield. So, and it was interesting seeing things like the Saudi Hawks doing.
They're good, aren't they?
Well, yeah, but doing formation flying through cloud is really kind of dumb.
Yeah, the low level performances aren't fabulous, are they?
Yeah. Yeah,
but you took lots and lots of pictures, though. You got to see aircraft, shiny, fast ones, but things that you'd never seen otherwise.
Absolutely. Almost everything there I've never seen before in my life, and I'll probably never see again in New Zealand. I'll never see any of that stuff there. I couldn't even use my proper camera because it was so – the rain was so intense that every time I tried to pull my camera out, it would get wet, and I was really worried that it was going to get damaged. So I was just using my phone, and even that got soaking wet. It wasn't a very pleasant day, I have to say. As far as air shows go, and it's no one's fault. It's just the rain. I'm not blaming the Riyat or anything like that. I'm sure it would have been a really good air show had it been a nice sunny day.
But the next
day, was Legends, and again the rain sort of affected it, but it was actually much better because at Riyat I was all by myself, and I had gone there with my good mate Steve Bridgewater, but he was in the chalets working because he's with the Royal Air,
drinking champagne,
with all hobnobbing, I think they call it.
You won't forgive me for that.
At Legends, it was Steve and I was with Graham Henderson and Simon Jakubowski and a few others there.
Yeah, wow.
And then there was, next to us there's some French guys that started talking to us. We met in the car park. Steve and I got out of the car and we met Swede. And he introduced himself. His name's Johan, and he spent the whole day with us, and then spent the next day with us, and we're all good mates. Like, absolutely brilliant. Like, he was had a great sense of humor and all that. So, we made a new good friend just getting out of the car and walking to the event.
But I think is it fair to say, Dave, that you were blown away by Legends?
100%. Even on the first day, which was quite marred by thunderstorms and rain and even a bit of hail. They did get some good flying in between the showers. Obviously, they were watching the rain radar and getting stuff up, and it was fantastic. However, the Sunday, we had good weather all day, and, oh, my God, I thought that we had some good flying in New Zealand, but I don't know if I can go to a New Zealand air show again and think the same way as I used to, because
what is it that's so special? Because it's not the same anymore. A lot of people who have now been say it's so much better than it used to be at the sort of flat performance at Duxford.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone was saying that when I was there. I've never seen the air show at Duxford. I've never been to an air show at Duxford. However, I'm fully aware of it from what everyone's been saying.
It's not bad.
I mean, Legends was already legendary at Duxford as the greatest warbird air show in the world. But now they're completely unrestricted. They haven't got the M11 that they can't fly over. They haven't got all these villages that they can't fly over. They haven't got any airspace above them that's restricted. They can go all the way to the top of the bloody world. So what they were doing is they were flying. If you're standing looking directly at the center of the display line. They're flying sort of out behind you to the right, and then they come around and around behind you to the left. It's a big curved display area too, by the way. And so Everybody along the flight line is getting a really good view of this. And it's really dynamic. It's so, I don't know. They keep into a small space in terms of not going too far away from the viewer, but they can go so many angles and it's quite hard to, you've got to go next year and go and see for yourself. That's all I can say to everyone who's listening to this. You must go. It is such a good air show.
Tell me about some of the aircraft you saw there then, Dave.
Oh, well, I mean, how many Spitfires were there? I think there was 11 of them that flew, plus two more on the ground. Unfortunately, the one I really wanted to see, ML-407, which, of course, was the famous number 485 New Zealand Squadron Spitfire, ended up with a brake issue, so it didn't fly. And the other aircraft that didn't fly was basically promoting rides. Just as a static, so you can go up and have a look at it and stuff. But the rest, I mean, there were three Mark 1 Spitfires. There were three Mark 5 Spitfires. I'd never, ever thought I'd see any of those flying, you know, a few years ago. And then there was a brand new Mark 14, the French Mark 14, that was there. There was a couple of Mark 9s. There was a Mark 8, sorry. That just blew me away. Then there's three hurricanes. Yeah, I've only ever seen one hurricane once before. That was in New Zealand, and that was before it went overseas. Three hurricanes together, and they're all in the Battle of Britain colors, and they're just, God, that was amazing. Couple of Bouchons. I've only ever seen one of them before. There was, the Bearcat. I've never seen a Bearcat in my life. That thing is so, different. It's so potent, you know.
Awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Sea Fury, I hadn't seen one of them since the early 1990s. Okay. Right. That was brilliant. What else is there? Oh, I can't forget the P-38 and the B-25.
I was just going to say, actually.
The Red Bull, oh, my God, they were good. What a team. Unfortunately, their Corsair was meant to come and didn't make it, but I mean, they didn't need it. Those two were just spectacular.
Yeah.
And then, even on the Saturday when it was blowing quite hard and quite wet, I couldn't believe the Swordfish turned up. And that thing, literally, that thing's flying in the really bad weather. Like, the weather was getting worse towards the end of the day.
Yeah.
And they were flying it really dynamically, and I was like, oh my God. I thought it would just sort of tootle around. I didn't think it would be doing like wingovers and stuff.
Yeah, they're very impressive, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
such really a cool are. Thing.
Yeah.
Is
that the first time you've seen the Swordfish or?
Yeah, in the air. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the same one that I saw in the hangar at, Yeovilton, but that was the first time I'd seen it in the air. The next day, funnily enough, it was kind of got windy before I got there the next day too. So I saw it 2 days, and both days was similar. It was, incredible to see one in the air. It's such a beautiful thing. And the Bristol, Pegasus,
Pegasus engine.
That sounds so good. Oh, I've always wanted to hear one. I've always wanted to hear one of those because, of course, we had them in the Vickers Wildebeest and the Vincent and the Blackburn Baffin. And, you know, I've always looked at those and thought, oh, I wonder what they sound like. And now I kind of know what they sound like.
Now you know, Dave.
Yeah.
Now you know. And I mean, you will have known when you visited them how tricky it is to keep them running nowadays. It's getting harder and harder.
Absolutely. Although I think you might find it's going to get easier because they're going to start remanufacturing parts. So, which was mentioned in the podcast.
Yeah.
So, which is the only way to go, really. So when I win Lotto, I might have to order me one of those engines and rebuild a Wildebeest or something.
Yeah. Did I see something today on one of the New Zealand forums about a Wildebeest, rebuilding or renovating?
Yes, there's only one wildebeest and one Vincent left in the world, and they're now both together in the same spot because Steve Sabritsky's Vickers Vincent has moved down to Wigram, which is the Air Force Museum of New Zealand, where they are currently restoring their wildebeest. Now, they're basically the same aircraft. The wildebeest was around it was a general reconnaissance aircraft. It was a torpedo aircraft. And the RAF called for tenders for a design of a general reconnaissance aircraft, which is basically a long-range steady aircraft. And so Vickers just took off the torpedo gear and put on an extra drop tank underneath and put that up, and they won the contract. Yeah. I think it's about 1936. And so they're basically the same aircraft with just a slightly different fuel system underneath. And actually, even the later wildebeests had that fuel system anyway. And so they're almost identical. So what's actually happening with those two is, whilst Wigram, because there's no drawings, by the way, whilst Wigram is trying to piece together all the bits that they've got, they've now got the much more advanced Vincent sitting next to it, so they can use that as a reference. And when they need to manufacture parts or, try and work out how to rebuild bits that are missing, they can do them together. I think that's how it's going to work. So, it'll progress both projects. And, Steve's Vincent is on loan for probably a few years, I guess. They're both fantastic projects, and the Vincent particularly, because it's a lot more advanced and it's nicely painted up with its camouflage and everything. It just looks
impressive. It looks impressive. Sorry for digressing there.
That's all right. But, that's all right. I'll always talk about Vickers Vincents and wildebeest. That's not a digression.
Maybe we need to talk about their service in the war then, because they did go on to serve quite a lot in some remote places, didn't they? So,
well, they served quite a lot of remote places before the war, but when the war came along, actually just before the war, the RAF was pretty much pulling them all out of service because they're replacing them with other things. And New Zealand was like, oh, we need to expand our air force and let's have some cheap secondhand stuff. And they brought up, I think it was 60 wildebeests and about, 100 Vincents, I think it was. I can't remember the exact numbers now. Off the RAF anyway, which all came out to New Zealand, and they put them into service as trainers. So people were going from moths and tiger moths onto these, and they were later replaced by Harvard. So they were doing the role of the Harvard. And they also went into service as our main defense, our defensive bombers, looking for shipping and carriers and submarines and stuff like that. And they really were our front line of defense until mid 1941 when we got, our first Lockheed Hudsons. But the Vincents ended up getting, some Vincents ended up getting posted to Fiji, and they were doing the same thing there, looking for shipping. Yep. Some were still in the RAF, just a few squadrons, and a lot of those were flown by Kiwis in the RAF, so attached to the RAF, because they were learning on them anyway, so they were all pretty experienced on them. So they were sending them up to places like Singapore and Malaya.
Yeah, that's right. I remember reading about them being used in India.
Yes, India is another place, and Ceylon as well. But they actually went into actual combat in Singapore. Number 36 and number 100 squadron they were actually, interestingly, in the very early part of the war with Japan, they were using them as night bombers, and they would fly up from Singapore, and those pilots most of them had been there for at least a couple of years, and they knew every track and road and everything. They flew over them every day as patrols. So they actually were finding and pinpointing the Japanese as they were coming down the Malayan Peninsula, and they were bombing them. And the Japanese could never actually hit them because they thought that these aircraft would be faster than they were, and so they were shooting in front of them, which is really funny. But they were actually really quite successful. They were bombing them at night. However, what happened was there was another invasion force that was going to come in to the bottom or lower down of the Malayan Peninsula at a place called Endau. And once the Allies realized this, they said, we've got to put everything into the air and try and stop this fleet. And so they bombed up the wildebeests of 36 and 100 Squadron, and they bombed up some Hudsons and Beauforts and all sorts of things like that. And they were escorted by Brewster Buffaloes and Hurricanes. And they went off and attempted in broad daylight to stop a modern fleet with these ancient aircraft. And unfortunately, the poor old wildebeests, at least half of them got shot down. Yeah. And some of the buffaloes got shot down. There were Zeros that were coming, I think from Thailand, that were, you know, cutting these guys down. And then they went and did another wave. And
wow.
I actually met a guy, a Kiwi, who was one of the flight commanders of 100 Squadron, and he did both waves. And
wow.
And honestly,
and survived, obviously.
Yeah, he survived, but most of them didn't. And
no.
Do you know what really, really annoys me is they've just been pretty much forgotten, those guys. And around about a week apart were those same, the exact same deal with the Swordfish attacking those ships in the in the English Channel. And the leader got a Victoria Cross. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't these guys get a Victoria Cross? Because it was just as big a failure. They didn't mention it didn't work. But anyway,
let's come back to Britain, but park that one, Dave. I sort of feel like I might need to come back and talk to you about that. But I know time's running on, but I wanted to mention one place. I know I was hoping to meet you there. You got to meet Ian Thirsk, and you made two visits with him, but the first one was to De Havilland Museum.
Yeah, what a place that is. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a tiny little thing, and if you don't know it's there, it's sort of a bit hidden out the way, but it's a bit of a gold mine.
It is. It's well worth seeking out and going and visiting there. There's nowhere else in the world, not even at Avspex, where you can see three mosquitoes sitting together in the same room. Well, at this stage anyway, who knows what aspects are good up to, you know, to see the actual prototype that that has survived, you know, 83 years and looks magnificent. And then there's a Mark 16 there and a Mark 36, I think it was. I'm just trying to remember the numbers. That sort of thing goes out of my head unless I've written it down. There's three mosquitoes there, and they just look magnificent. But there's a lot of other De Havilland stuff there as well. There's a great collection, really great collection of De Havilland stuff, including into the jet era. And, and it's right next to the paddock where they flew mosquitoes out. They actually assembled the early mosquitoes at that place, and they flew the mosquitoes out of the paddock, and you can just smell the history. It's really great.
Now I wanted also to ask you about one of our bigger museums, but again, I'm not sure so many people go there. It gets a bit overlooked, and that's the RAF museum.
Which one? I went to both.
You did, yeah. You called me out there. I was thinking of London, but of course you did go to both. Tell us about those visits.
Well, I went to Cosford first, and that's got such an incredible collection. I was just awed by particularly some of the bombers there. The Vickers Wellington, which has just come off a long restoration, magnificent. And the one that really took my breath away, because I didn't think it would, is the Avro Lincoln.
Okay.
It's a stunner. It really is. It's just such an incredible aircraft to just stand underneath and look up. And you know, I've been around Lancasters and it's much the same size and shape and everything, but I don't know, there was just something about the presence of that Lincoln in that place. It's just an incredible aircraft. Oh, everything you can think of is there, like Hawker biplanes and Hurricane and Spitfire and, you know, lots of things like that. They've got some German stuff. Junkers 88, the only complete Junkers 88 in Britain. There's the world's only Messerschmitt 410, incredible looking thing. They've got lots of big aircraft outside. There's the Cold War hangar that's got it's the only place in the world that you can see a Vulcan, a Victor, and a Valiant all together in the same place.
Yeah. Was that a first for you, those aircraft?
I had seen a Vulcan before. I don't think I'd seen the others. So I'd seen a Vulcan at Duxford when I was young, but
yeah,
I hadn't seen the others. So And also seen the, you know, some of the big transports like the Hastings. That's just so good,
massive, isn't it?
Yeah, to think that we had them and our Air Force as well. And unfortunately, we now have only got a cockpit and engines left of the one that was meant to be preserved. So.
And that's why it's so important that these places exist and
exactly, and
keep this heritage going.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So what about London? What about the RAF Museum in London? I can't remember, Dave, if I'd asked you this or not, but had you visited that before?
Years ago, when I came to England twice, I did go to – that's the one place I went to twice. So I had been there before. It's completely different now. Absolutely different. There's more buildings. But the thing that was the biggest impact on me is stepping out of the tube station, I thought I'd got off the train at the wrong place because the whole suburb is different.
It was all fields
before, and now it's like massive apartment blocks.
So that
just shows you how long ago I was last there, which was 1996.
Listen, London is growing. Every week I go there, there's a new block of flats or something. It's growing at a rapid rate.
But a lot of the collection has changed because stuff's moved up to Cosford, and I guess Cosford stuff's moved down. They've changed it around, and there was definitely a number of aircraft that I remember from the last time, but it's so long that a lot of it I've forgotten. So going around the museum with Ian 2 days ago, it was fantastic because, you know, Ian was the collection manager for years now, and
he knows it intimately, doesn't he?
Absolutely. He's got all the stories. He's really good. I did record the chat as we went around, and I hope that'll become an episode, but I'm not sure because it was so noisy in that museum.
Yeah, it is noisy. I think a good few years ago we did something there, and I think that was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I kept hearing kids yelling and screaming, and I look around, I can't see any kids. It's like they could be like half a kilometre away, but it just echoes through those big buildings.
It is an amazing museum, though. Isn't it?
It absolutely is. Yeah.
And Dave, where have you? I know you've only got a few days left on this visit, and we haven't covered half of what you've been to see. But anything remaining that you're looking forward to?
Well, I haven't been to Duxford yet, and I'm spending a couple of days there in the coming week.
Right.
So that'll be good. And I'm also going down to Harlow to catch up with my friend Dennis Sharp, who is going to take me to former RAF Hunsdon, which was not only a RAF base for mosquitoes, but it was the home of number 487 squadron, the New Zealand squadron.
They
flew from there when they went on the likes of the Army on Prison raid and the Gestapo headquarters raid, that sort of thing. And Dennis is one of the guys that looks after the memorial there, so I'm looking forward to going and have a look at that and just seeing what history is around there as well.
And you've been to a number of and I don't mean this in any sort of negative way, but you've been to some smaller museums, you've been to a lot of memorials in particular, because I know you wanted to ensure that you took in that the energy of those places where the New Zealanders had fought and in some cases were interred and that sort of thing. If you were to start thinking about highlights and key things to take away, apart from the fact that we're all looking forward to another 20 or 30 episodes of the Wings Over Britain feature, what are you going to take away from this visit, Dave? What's it meant to you?
It's a tough question. There's so much that I've gained on this trip. And I think one of the most incredible things is that everybody has been so kind and supportive and really getting behind what I'm doing. And that's been brilliant. Getting to see aircraft that I've never seen before and I've, you know, read about, I've recorded with veterans about and all that sort of thing, to see them in the flesh, and particularly the ones flying at the likes of Legends and Shuttleworth, that means a hell of a lot to me. I also got a real kick, like out of yesterday, I came across to Cambridgeshire, and I'm currently in Norfolk at Thetford. I got off the train at Ely and caught up with my friend Dee Bonham, who's very involved with the 75 Squadron Association. We have a New Zealand association, and there's a British association, and she's involved in the British association because the squadron was a New Zealand squadron, but there were a lot of Brits on it, particularly the ground crew, but also air crew. And she took me around some of the airfields of our bomber squadron, Meeple and Newmarket Heath, which is the racecourse. They flew Stirlings out of the racecourse there, which I could never imagine until I actually stood there yesterday and saw how big that place is. It's incredible. We went to Feltwell. You can't get onto the base or anything because it's still active, but we, you know, had a look around the village and saw everywhere we went, there's little memorials that we stopped at. And then on the way here, where she was going to drop me at Thetford, where I'm staying, we went to Honington, and Honington is just down the road. I knew that there was an RAF base there, but the village I knew because of my interest in the and my love of the TV series Dad's Army. The school and church there were actually used as the exteriors for the churchyard and the church hall and Dad's Army. And so I just said to her, oh, if we're going through Honington, can we stop there? And so we did. I took photos of where the Dad's Army scenes were, you know, filmed, but we decided to walk around the churchyard. And here in the churchyard, we found, I think it was five or six New Zealanders, who had been killed at Honington RAF base, as well as a number of Poles and Czechs and Brits, and there were five Germans, which is really unusual to see them in a little churchyard. Their bomber had been shot down in 1940, and that was incredible. And we went inside the church, and we're looking around, and just as we were about to come out, I looked up, and right up near the ceiling, here's the New Zealand flag flying. All by itself, and I just don't know why. I've taken a photo of it, and I'm like, why is that there? And Dee's like, I don't know. I've never seen that before. And she'd been in there many times because she was based at it in the RAF. So, and I'm just like, that's incredible. Like, things like that, it really gets to you, you know, like you're thinking about those connections that there are still people in these little villages that are remembering what our boys did and what the Poles and the Czechs and all the others in that churchyard, they're remembered, which is nice.
And really, Dave, that's the whole point of this. And I know you set out to achieve recording what was left through the Wings Over New Zealand podcast. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't follow you, if you have any interest at all in the Second World War, and it doesn't even have to be New Zealand related, because there's a lot of content on there that is archived there. You've got lots of Brits, you've got lots of others on there. So it's not just about New Zealanders, but it's a fascinating archive of Second World War interviews and features. And I'm hoping that the Wings Over Britain series is going to do the same. I'm really, really looking forward to the next releases, Dave. I've really enjoyed the first two that I've got to listen to so far. But tell us how can we follow you? How can we find you? Whereabouts can we get this fabulous podcast from?
Well, the best way is to simply go to Google and put in Wings Over New Zealand show. That will bring up the show website, and there are currently 277 episodes there in the archive. And later tonight, hopefully there'll be 278. The ones that I've been putting up here in England, they're not linked to the main page because I need another computer that's at home in New Zealand to do that. But if you look at each show page, if you go to the very last one, which would be 2,275, at the bottom right of each page, there's a link to the next one, and you can follow through each page like that. Yeah, just go to the Wings Over New Zealand show page and you'll find every episode up there going back to 2011. As you said, there's lots of World War II content, but there's also post-war guys who served in the RNZF. There's post-war RAF guys who live in New Zealand. There's lots of content on the warbird scene and museums and all that sort of thing in New Zealand as well. There's all sorts of stuff, GA and civil flying and even a bit of airline stuff, all that is in there. If you're interested in any of that kind of thing, the Wings Over New Zealand show is now one of the longest lasting aviation podcasts. And it's just me. I don't have a team behind me. It's just me. So every now and then I'll put one out when I get the time, and there'll be a lot coming out soon.
we're looking forward to that, Dave. And listen, we don't want to underplay the quality of the content you've got there. It is absolutely superb. As I say, particularly if you've got an interest in the Second World War, the content is it's absolutely unique. Yeah. As you said, great Cold War coverage, post-war coverage as well. And I know you don't like them, but you also do some shiny airliner stuff. And I've really enjoyed some of those stories, particularly some of those long-haul pilot stories that you featured.
I've got no problem with talking to guys like that. Talking to the people about their stories, that's fine. That's just the airliners themselves are boring.
Right. Well, then before I let you go, I'm going to absolutely put you on the spot, Dave. Mm-hmm. I want to know, what is the best flying display or static display you've seen on this monumental trip that you've been on?
Well, flying display, it's a bit of a toss-up, really. I think the thing that kind of stunned me the most would be seeing the de Havilland Comet being thrown about like it gets thrown about at Shuttleworth, because I had no idea. I literally had no idea how maneuverable that thing is. It's meant to go in a straight line real fast, and I didn't realize that it could be, you know, flown like a top dresser aircraft or something, you know. So that really stands out.
A static or something like that that you've seen that blew you away?
It's got to be the Wellington I'm going to qualify this. It is the Wellingtons, the one at Brooklands and the one at Cosford, both incredible.
Yeah.
The Vickers Wellingtons, just both incredible. One you can see all the way through it because it hasn't got skin on most of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And the other one, it looks like it's just rolled out of the factory, and it's very, 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 very cool.
Well, Dave, thanks again for joining us. You've taught us so much about what we should already know so much about, but don't. I'm really, really looking forward to the Wings Over Britain next episodes due to come out. So thanks for joining us, Dave.
No problem. I appreciate it. And also, when I get some decent Wi-Fi, there'll be a lot more photos coming out too. I've taken thousands of photos and a few videos as well. So keep an eye on particularly on the Wings Over New Zealand. Probably more likely the Wings Over Britain Facebook page, because I've got a special one just for the trip.
And we'll put links to those in the show notes.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks.
Well, that's That's it. We'd like to thank White Hart, Sam McCokey at the Aviation Historian. And of course, we love the support given to us by Simon Jakubowski at the Aviation Enthusiasts Book Club.
He's a great guy too.
He is a super, he is an absolutely super guy.
He's bloody funny.
Yeah, he is. He's got a great sense of humour, but he's just a nice bloke.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've completely framed me there, Dave. Sorry. So you can find me at Mascot Hornet on Twitter, and you can find Tim Garofanelli at the Aviation Extended Twitter, Facebook, Threads, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages. And that's it with your Riolated Music. It's goodbye from Dave.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended. Legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our programme and broaden its reach. You can also review the programme and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
Extend it!
This is XCP Media.